Tes Vov Elul, Sunday the 18th of September, Rabbi Avraham Yeshaya Goldman, How to Reverse an At-Risk Generation. This week's Torah Away has been sponsored by Ilu Nishmas, Reb Aryeh, Ben Reb Moshe, Bezalel Reich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha.
First of all, I'd like to start by thanking Dudi for the opportunity. There's been, over the last decade or so, there's been a phenomenon which is becoming more and more apparent as we see many of our youth, many children, boys and girls, and even young adults who seem to be struggling, keeping along the same derech as which they've been brought up to go along, and keeping to the way their families have brought them up. So while today I'm not going to speak about what is actually making this phenomenon happen, what is going on in the minds of these teenagers and young adults, what I will speak about is what we as a kehillah, as grandparents, as parents, can do when we see children who are struggling, when we see people who are not following along the correct way, along the way that we brought them up to go along. And what gives me the right to stand up here and speak, so I feel it's important that I first introduce myself, that for the last 11 and a half years I've been working on the front line, and I've had the zechus to work with some of the most precious neshamas in Klal Yisrael. I was first a magister in a specialized yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, after which I set up my own yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael together with Rabbi Weitz from over here. And for the last 6.5 years, I've been in Manchester, I've been running a yeshiva in Manchester. And I've also been to America, and I've done lots of research into what's going on with our youth, and I've had a very unique view, which many people don't get to see. Every 24 hours a day, I've been zeich to see some of the most precious neshamas, how they work, what goes on in their minds, and their struggles, and how they grow and develop into part of our kehillah. It's also important to say that there is no such thing as one size that fits all. Chinuch cannot be put into a box, and it's not one size that fits all. And I'm talking about probably more of the more extreme cases. However, what I'm saying can be applied right from the beginning. Rav Shlomo Volber says that a parent and a grandparent and a kehillah's responsibility is to develop a close connection with our children from a very young age already, from the age of 2 and 3 years old, in order that that close relationship over the younger years will stay strong enough to be able to withstand the stresses of the teenage years. Now, I spoke a few weeks ago in Manchester, and when I did speak there, so as I walked into Mafsik Hadass, where the drasha took place, somebody came over to me and he said to me, "You might as well turn around to the front and start saying Tehillim, because really that's all you can do." And in truth, he's right. The only thing we can really do is daven. We always have to daven and daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he helps us to guide our children and to guide our kehillahs and to guide the people that we see and to only say the right things wherever we go. But after we've davened, then what do? When we see children who are struggling. So it's important to know, which again is not the topic of today, it's important to know that what's going on with these children is that they're not bali taiva and they're not rebellious. A rebel is the worst type of human being. A rebel is a type of human being who has no regard for society. He's somebody who deliberately wants to work against what's the norm. And none of our children, chas v'shalom, that I've seen, and I've seen hundreds of children, are rebellious. And none of them either are bali taiva. The goyim, I think everyone would agree, the umas ha'ilam, are very much bali taiva, and they can fulfill their taivas over the weekend, and they'll be in work 9 o'clock Monday morning. When we see our youth who are struggling, the girls and boys who are struggling, many of them can't hold down a normal day. They can't hold down a normal day, so it's nothing to do with taiva that is causing them to be dysfunctional and causing them to do what they're actually doing. I've worked, as I said, with hundreds and hundreds of struggling children, and I have a close relationship with some of the leading experts in the Jewish world. Rav Shimon Russell himself, who is one of the leading psychotherapists in the Jewish world, has worked with thousands of children who've been off the derech, who've gone off the derech, and he says that he can count on one hand children who have chosen to go off the derech. One of the worst comments we can actually make to a child is stop looking for an excuse to go off the derech. Invariably, most children who are going off the derech, who are struggling to stay in the right path, have been through some tremendous trauma. And when they hear from well-meaning people in the kehillah, from well-meaning rabbonim, that they should stop looking for an excuse to go off the derech, this is tantamount to murder. It's one of the most difficult things for them to hear, and it sends them flying off the derech much faster than anything else can. So it's important, first of all, to dispel the notion that there is such a thing as a child who's looking to go off the derech. Rav Matisyahu Salaman Shlita says that children do not go off the derech, they're pushed off the derech. And if a child is struggling, that's because something has happened. So let me explain that a little bit more. There's such a thing called guilt. When a person does something wrong, he feels guilty for what he's done. And he feels that what he actually did, the actions of what he did, was wrong. And next time he hopes that he'll do better. That's the hope. When one feels guilty, that what I do next time hopefully will be better. I won't make the same mistake. Guilt is very different from shame. When somebody feels shamed, when somebody feels that they are ashamed, that they are ashamed of who they are, of what they do, it's not action-based like guilt is. It's not what I did was wrong. It's more person-based. I am a mistake, rather than what I did was a mistake. And many children feel, I am a mistake, when they are told so many times that they could just do a little bit better if they tried harder. When they are told that if this one in the class can do so well and get such good for hair marks, you're so much cleverer, you can of course do much better, then they are just having the knife dug in deeper because they feel ashamed of who they are. There's always something going on in the background of these children, whether it's something they've seen, whether it's trauma they've been through, whether it's some type of abuse that they've been through. Something is going on in this child's life and he feels shamed for who he is. And often in the younger years, he feels ashamed and he feels to himself, if my rebellion and my parents really knew who I was, if you really knew what I'd seen, what I've done, what I speak about, then you'd throw me out of the house. Then you'd throw me out of your class and I have no right to belong. And this develops over the years, and if they do ever get compliments, they feel they're not worthy of those compliments. And before long, when they get into their adolescent years, it takes an effect and they feel that they have no right to belong to a success. Yiddishkeit is a successful world. And they feel they have zero right to belong to that world because they don't feel guilty for what they've done. They feel ashamed of what they've done or who they are and of their life. And as such, they feel they have no right to belong. There's a Yid in America called Avi Fishoff who lives in Flatbush. And he trains many, many parents, hundreds and hundreds of parents who struggle with their children. And I've been there to see him and he was telling me of a case of a child who was in such pain because of his shame. That he went over to his family portrait hanging on the wall, the big portrait that was hanging on the wall, and he ripped his face out of the portrait because he felt so ashamed he had no right to belong. This following story is a true story. It's an extremely sad story, but it's important to know because these things are happening everywhere. Baruch Hashem in England, we're not yet there, but if we create enough of an awareness, we may be able to stop these things happening. This story took place in Eretz Yisrael. There was a Hasidish boy who wasn't going in the same way as his family. He was still keeping most of the Torah and mitzvahs, but he was already looking cooler than his family. He'd changed his kapel, his peyas, which were long and crazzled, were long and curled beforehand, had now gone behind his ear, and he used to walk around with his record open, and he didn't wear his gatel anymore, whatever it was. His sister became a kala, and he was very excited to take part in the family simcha. And he came to the hall where the engagement was taking place. He wasn't wearing his hat, and he wasn't looking smart. He had his record open, and he had his payers gelled, whatever it was. And somebody, one of the family members, came running over to him as soon as he walked into the room, and said to him, "Wer darf dich du? Who needs you over here? You have to come like this and embarrass the whole family. This is how you have to do to us, even in public, even by your own sister, Simcha. This is how you have to come. Can you really not pull yourself together?" And the boy ran out of the hall crying. The family came home and they found that he'd hanged himself. This is a true story. I saw the pictures of the boy, I saw the Levi notices. And this is how the boy felt because of such internal shame and such internal pain that he felt he had no right to belong, that this is what happened. And the truth is that there's an organization called Amudim in America which tracks the suicide rate across Borough Park and Flatbush and Lakewood. And over 75 Yiddish neshamas, teenagers who've overdosed and committed suicide in the last year since Rosh Hashanah is a terrible, terrible tragedy which is taking place in the Jewish world. I personally myself know of many boys and girls who have tried to commit suicide and have tried to self-harm themselves because the internal pain and shame that they feel when they go out among the Kehillah and they get the comments of the hairstyles, of what the kappa looks like, or what all the well-meaning comments that people try to give to them to push them to go in the right direction, all it is really, really hurting them. The Nesivas Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe, who has a sefer called Nesivas Chinuch, it's a small little kuntrius, and he writes in here that he's talking regarding being mechanuch, children who are struggling, and he writes, misbukhayim. And if the problem that's taking place with these children is because of emotional issues, there's something going on deep inside, right? Then harei kol maskana va'ena shelo bevakim anochin. Any type of discipline which is misplaced, any misplaced discipline, yisavek hasayelet pi kamo, will aggravate the situation many, many times over. Shavimuvan haruchni zeh kahirig nefesh mamish. Because in such a matzah, when we're talking about an emotional illness, when a child is struggling, any misplaced discipline is kahirig nefesh mamish. As you see with Shalom's words. And this was written many years ago, before we were so aware of the phenomenon of at-risk. The Gamliel Rabinovich also writes that children today have got a din of a meis mitzvah. When we see a child struggling, Gamliel Rabinovich is a mekubel in Eretz Yisrael, and he writes that today's children have a din of a meis mitzvah where it's everybody's achrayas to take care of them. Even the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur would have to be metamer himself for a meis mitzvah. Everybody in Klal Yisrael has an achrayas to take care of a child who's struggling and do whatever they can to make this child feel welcome, whether it's a boy, whether it's a girl, whether it's a younger man, to feel that they are part of our kehillah and they have a place in our kehillah. So the question is, how should we react when we see children who, chas v'shalom, are smoking on Shabbos, when we see them using their phones on Shabbos, walking around without walking around without a kapel, or even before that stage, when we see children walking into a Beis HaMedrash and they've changed what either their kappa might be, whether it has a difference of whether it has a little piece of cloth around the edge of it or not, or they've changed their hairstyle, or they're wearing ridiculous clothes. How should we react when we see these people walking into the Beis HaMedrash, and it looks to us like they could be embarrassing their family? It looks like to us that they're doing this deliberately to rebel against everything that we hold dear. So in Parshas Devarim, we have the answer there in the third Rashi of Parshas Devarim, the third pasuk. Rashi speaks there about Moshe Rabbeinu said he was telling of Klal Yisrael Samach Lemisasi. So Rashi asks, Mimi Lomat, who did Moshe Rabbeinu learn from to tell of Klal Yisrael Samach Lemisasam? And Rashi answers, he learnt from Yaakov. Because Yaakov didn't tell off his son Reuven. Reuven was the first of the Shiftei Kah. And Reuven went and messed around in his father's private affairs. And Yaakov didn't say one word of telling off till 45 years later. 45 years later, Yaakov Avinu said to Reuven, now that I'm about to die, I'm going to tell you off for what you did 45 years previously when you mixed around in my private affairs. And Rashi gives a reason why Yaakov waited so long to tell Yaakov off. Reuven off. He said, because Omar, Reuven bini, my son Reuven, and he oimelach mipnei ma'alo hechakticho kol hashanam alolu. Why did I not tell you off all these years? Kedei shelo tanicheni, I was scared that you would leave me. And that you'd go and join my brother Esav. So this is what Yaakov was going through Yaakov's mind. He didn't want to give Reuven a Musad Rasha because he was worried that Reuven would go and go and join Esav. So before we give a Musad Rasha to a child, to a grandchild, to one of the members of the Kehillah, then we have to ask ourselves three questions. First of all, are we a better Bal Musa than Yaakov Avinu? Will we have the right words to say more than Yaakov Avinu? Secondly, is our son more holy and more a makabel than Reuven, who was the first of the Shiftei Kah? And is Esav today something that we really need to worry about? Maybe Esav's not around today anymore. So if one thinks that the answer to the first two questions are yes, that you're a better Bal Musa than Yaakov, or that your son is a better makabel than Reuven, then the answer to the third question, do we have to worry about Esav, is a resounding yes, we do. It's a lot worse than Esav used to be. And I'll explain more in a minute. Rav Shach writes on this inyan as well. He wrote in the 1980s, in a letter to a Talmud, we seem to have missed this somewhere along the line, that Miyamos Yeshua ben Gamla, from the days of Yeshua ben Gamla, who set up the educational system, that it's not the achrayas, the responsibility of a parent to be mechanech his child, it's the responsibilities of the schools. And he writes, the reason is because in chinuch, sometimes one has to be tough a little bit. One sometimes has to be tough, and if a parent is tough with his children, then it could be that they would leave the home and they were going to seek the chom va'ava, the warmth and love elsewhere. So therefore, says Rav Shach, it's important for a parent to know his place, to be the one to guide his child by example, but to make sure that they are giving the warmth and love that's so necessary so that they don't look for it elsewhere. So when a kid comes home with a crazy haircut, or a kid comes home boasting about that he's done something ridiculous, So what's going on over here? So his parents are going to want to give him, let's say a kid, chas v'shalom, take an extreme example, which is not so extreme, a kid's gone and shoplifted and he thought it was really cool, he managed to walk out the shop and get past the security guards, and he comes home and he shows his parents, look what I managed to lift from the shops. Now obviously most straight-thinking parents are going to think, give him a resounding musar drasha, tell him off and make sure that he doesn't end up in jail, because this is what's going to happen if he carries on along this way. So we have to take into account again, Reuven and Yaakov. Are we better than Yaakov Avinu? Is our child better than Reuven? And now about Esau. If you tell your child, if somebody tells a child that this was a terrible thing to do, and he tells him off and he gives him and grounds him and gives him a harsh punishment, obviously he's got to know his child and it's all got to be adapted to the child in each individual case, then this child can easily go to his room and he can access the Esau out there within seconds. On Facebook, on Snapchat, on Instagram, on all the various social media platforms out there, within minutes, he will have people telling him how cool he is and what a wonderful thing he's done, and wow, and people will be sharing their experiences. So in his mind, he'll be thinking, I am the cool one, and my parents are simply irrelevant. They don't understand what's cool and what's going down. They'll get that warmth, they'll get that ava within minutes from the outside world. And that's why it's so important that we need to be the one who are being the support system for our children and for the Kehillah as a whole. So again, as I said, it's important to understand that what's going on inside them is not who they really are. Children who are acting out like this, if a child can do well, he will do well. And the only reason he's not doing well is because something has happened, there's been a tremendous amount of trauma and pain inside him which is going on. There's a story with the Babava Rebbe to illustrate this. The Shlomo Babava, after the Second World War, came to America. And he was trying to rebuild the Babava Chassidus. And he was hiring a room at the beginning on the Lower East Side in Manhattan. And he used to scrape together a minyan. He had a few of the Chassidim who had survived. And they looked to scrape together a minyan. One Friday night, one Erev Shabbos, he was outside looking to bring in a tzeitah. And he saw a yid. You can see it was clearly a yid who was rushing past with the New York Times under his arm. Cap pulled low over his eyes. And the Rosh Hashanah Babava called out, Rav Yid, do you want to come and join the minyan? So the Yid turns around to him and in a heavily accented voice says, how do you know I'm Yiddish? How do you know I'm Jewish even? And then he proceeds to tell him about his experiences in the camps, how he lost all his family in the camps, and he starts to finish with all Yiddishkeit, and he starts to tell him about all the pain and sorrows he's been through. And during the course of the conversation, he mentioned that my father and my grandfather were chazanim, I was a chazan before the war. So Rav Shlomo picked up on this and says, Gevaldik, he goes, we need a chazan. We're short of a chazan. Please come and be our chazan. So this was too much for this Yid to resist. So he came. He came to be the chazan on the omelet. The entire davening, Rav Shlomo Babava looked at the chazan and was just like enthralled by the davening. And after the davening, he went over to him and said to him, please, after such a davening, I can't imagine our minyan without you again. You have to come every week. We really need you. So the next week, it took him time. He was hanging around outside waiting to be called in. And indeed, that's how it went on and so forth for the next few weeks. After a while, two of the chassidim came over to Rav Shlomo Babava and said to him, you know our chazan who davens here Shabbos? We saw him smoking in the park on Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo said he didn't see him smoking in the park on Shabbos. So he said, no, I promise you, we were there. You can ask the angle of it. We saw him smoking in the park on Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo said he didn't see him smoking. Listen, we're Eder, Rebbe, Mechidus Kavoyitzchot, we actually saw him light up a cigarette on Shabbos. At least don't let him be our chazan. So Rav Shlomo said he didn't. He wasn't having any of it. He didn't see him smoking. And not only that, but Rav Shlomo's mechabed him even more, gave him the chosh of aliyahs. And eventually Babav grew to the big chassidus it became. And the chazan parted ways from Babav. And many years later, an old man walks into Babav Beis HaMedrash and wants to speak to the Rebbe at Shalosh Shudas time on Shabbos. And waits till after Abdullah comes over to the Rebbe and goes, Rebbe, do you recognize me? He goes, no, I don't. He goes, I was your chazan in the early days on the Lower East Side. Oh, Shalom Aleichem, how are you doing? He says, I must tell you, tomorrow I'm making Sheva Brachos, my first Einikul, who just got married. Please, can the Rebbe come and join us? So the Rosh Hashanah says, yeah, Mitzvah Shem, I'm looking forward, tell me the address, and I'm looking forward, I'll be coming to the Sheva Brachos. He calls over his two chassidim, two of the old chassidim from the early days, and he says to them, tomorrow we're going to a Sheva Brachos, I want you to come at this and this time, and we're going to go together to the Sheva Brachos. So they didn't know whose Sheva Brachos it was, and they come with him, and they go over to the Sheva Brachos. They come into a hall, and they see a whole Yiddish Simcha going on there, children running around here, there, and everywhere, proper Haimish Simcha, and the old man comes running over, sees the Rebbe come in, Shalom Aleichem, sits him down at the top table. Anyway, so the two chassidim are very perplexed. They say to him, who is this? It's not one of our kehillah. She says, do you remember the chazan on the Lower East Side? So they go, oh, the one we saw smoking in the park on Shabbos. Rebbe, why did he never believe us that he was smoking, that we saw him smoking in the park? Because I want to tell you, you never saw him smoking in the park. You saw the Nazi inside of him was smoking in the park. It was the pain that he'd been through that, the hands of the Nazis, that caused him to do what he was doing. And as such, he wasn't able to. But if, and imagine, he said, if we would have thrown him out then, someone who's going through so much pain, if we would have thrown him out then, you wouldn't be seeing the Yiddish Adoris that you're seeing over here running around this hall, who are now all from and a big Jewish family. The Chazon Ish says, there's a story in the Chazon Ish that the only way to keep children close is to tackle with the Chaim and Ava. And there's a story brought down in Maaseh Ish, and Sefer Maaseh Ish in Perek Beis. It says there very clearly, there's a father who came to the Chazon Ish who had a son struggling. This was back in the days, it was many, many years ago. So he was a wealthy man, and his son wanted a car. He was 17 years old. His son was rebelling, as you know, as they say, rebelling. And he wasn't keeping very much. And he was happy to buy his son a car on condition the son didn't drive it on Shabbos. So the son was having none of it, and he came to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish says, buy him the car with no strings attached, because this is the only way he's going to come back. And this is brought down in Maaseh Ish many, many years, this is from many years ago already. Because the only way is by keeping the door open. There's a Moedig Hashem Shmuel on last week's parasha by Ben Soira and Moira. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Ben Soira and Moira is judged as Shem Sofai, because we're worried that this type of behavior is going to lead him to become a murderer, and it's better that he should die Zakai. But the Gemara says that in Aviv Imoy Roitzin, if their parents are, if they're what's it called, in Aviv Imoy, if the parents want to forgive him, then he's forgiven and he doesn't get the death sentence. So the Shem Shmuel asks two questions. First of all, since when do we give up so easily on a yid? There's always the chance to do teshuva. So why is it that we just let this child drift? Why do we let this child drift without and go and send him to Basin and we have him killed without leaving him the chance to do teshuva? And if you want to say that this type of behavior, Zoyl of the Sovei, that he's a glutton, that he's a ganav, this type of behavior is for sure going to lead to him becoming a murderer and there's no chance for him to do teshuva, then what's the difference if his parents are moichel him or not? If his parents forgive him, this kid's going to become a murderer. Who cares if his parents forgive him? What difference does that make? Says Hashem Shmuel something wonderful. He says that every yid has an achilik el kaim imal. He has an asham inside of him. Every yid is in essence a good, holy person. Our avarice make us stumble. But then, the process of teshuvah reconnects us through a shalshelis HaKodesh, says Hashem Shmuel, which we don't have time to explain, but it reconnects us through a shalshelis HaKodesh, through the chain which links us through our parents, all the way back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now we all bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then we come close again to our Kodesh Baruch Hu when we do teshuvah, by relinking all the way back through the generations. Says Hashem Shmuel, if a parent gives up on a child, that means they're cutting the shalshelis HaKodesh. They're cutting that chain. And it's impossible, therefore, for the child to do teshuva. He can't relink. There's no linkage anymore. And his parents who bring him to Beit Din to have him killed have obviously lost the connection with their child. And this child has got no way back. There's no way. The rope has been cut. And that's taka why he's nidan Hashem Sofai, because this child is not coming back. However, if they want to forgive him, he steals, and they say, it doesn't matter, we still love you. And he doesn't listen to them, and he embarrasses them. They say, we still love you. And he eats their food, and he drinks their wine. And they say, you know, we still love you. You're still our child, and you're still so precious to us. Then he doesn't get judged anymore, because it's vadai, says Hashem Shmuel. This child will come back. The chain is holding him so tight, he doesn't need to be nidden Hashem Sofer, because the Sofer will be that he's going to do teshuvah. We're running out of time, so I'm going to just finish off with something, just recap very quickly. Now, what we said is that when we see children struggling, there's something inside them. It's the Nazi inside of them. It's the pain that they've suffered, struggled with. It's the pain that they've suffered inside of them. The lack of compliments through the years. The judgmental people that they've heard giving them comments through the years. It's the feeling of shame inside them that they do not belong to the success of Yiddishkeit that's causing them to do what they're doing. And when we see children struggling, it's so important to go over to them and give them a good encouraging word. In fact, I had somebody who came over to me after I spoke in Manchester, and he said, a person who never said a word to me, I've seen him in the Kehila for many years, no more than a nod when we go past each other in the street, and he came over to me after Madrasha, and he said to me that, I want you to know that I was in a car mechanics the other day, and I saw clearly a Jewish boy standing over on the side. He wasn't wearing a kappa or anything else, and he had a big, a pair of wraparound shades on his eyes, and he was sitting there looking angry with the whole world, and usually I would have just ignored him, because I went over to him, and I said to him, nice pair of shades. So he said to me, what do you know about shades? So I said, no, I can see them, Ray-Bans with a certain type of lens, whatever it was. He goes, wow. He goes, you know who I am, don't you? So he goes, no, actually, I don't know who you are. So he said to me, this young man told me that, the kid said to him after, thank you, you don't know what it means to me that you came over to me to say, to compliment me on my shade, to really appreciate it. I happen to know the boy was. I worked with him many, many years ago, and this boy has been through an enormous amount of abuse and struggles in life. He was sleeping on a park bench at the age of 14 years old. The boy was really struggling. When someone came over to him and just said a nice comment to him, it made a whole difference. So I'd just like to finish off very quickly with a short mashal. There were two children who grew up in a village together with their father. They lived in a poor village, Yankel and Shlomi. They grew up in a poor village, and they spent their childhood years carefree together without very much. And then eventually they grew up, and Yankel became a very successful businessman, and he moved to the city, and he got married over there, and he built up an enormous business empire. Shlomi was a bit more of a shlemazel, and he stayed at home, and he eventually did get married, but he never made any parnasa, and he stayed where he was together with his family. Anyway, one day Shlomi's wife says to him, "You know something, Yankel's so wealthy, he's doing so well, maybe send him a telegram, go over to Yankel and ask him to help us out, look at our situation is so bad." So Yankel sends a telegram to his brother Yankel and gets no reply. So he decides, you know what, I'm going to borrow fare to take some sort of a carriage over to where Yankel lives, and he's going to make the journey and go and appeal to Yankel to help him out. He hasn't seen Yankel in many years, and off he goes. He gets to the big business buildings where Yankel works, and he goes into the secretary and he goes, "I'd like to speak to the boss." So they said, "You have an appointment?" So he said, "I'm sorry, I don't have an appointment." So they said, "And his brother, you know, I'm Shlomi's brother. Tell him it's Shlomi's brother, I'm sure he'll be fine to see me." The answer came back, "I don't have a brother, Shlomi." So he goes, "No, don't be silly. You might have forgotten, I haven't spoken to him for many years, but I'm here." And the secretary was happy, "You can't go in without an appointment." So he pushed past the secretary, goes upstairs to the boss's office, bangs on the door, and walks in. And Yankel's sitting there in the middle of a business meeting, and he goes, "Yankel, it's me, Shlomi. I don't know who you are." "Yeah, seriously, Yankel, of course you know I am Shlomi. Do you not remember the times we spent climbing the tree houses and the farms and all the things we did when we were teenagers and when we were young children? I don't know who you are. If you don't get out of my office, I'm going to have to call security." Yankel, Shlomi was shocked. He goes, "Yankel, how can you do that? I'm your brother. Either get out or I call security." And he calls security and they evict Shlomi from his offices. And Shlomi goes back very heartbroken, goes back to his village and carries on life as it was. Months go by and Yankel gets a telegram, "Your father's on his deathbed, you must come home." So he gets into his first class carriage and off he goes back to the village where he grew up, pushes open the door to his father's hovel and goes upstairs and sees indeed his father's lying on his deathbed there, very, very weak. And he's turned facing the door to his brother, Shlomi, sitting on the other side of the bed. And the father's speaking to Shlomi. So he pulls up a chair and he sits down, waiting to get the Shalom Aleichem, waiting to speak to his father before his niftar. And the hours go by and the father doesn't even turn around to look at him. So after a bit, Yankel starts, you know, shuffling his chair and making noises, you know, to get some attention. And eventually he can't hold himself back and he goes, "Tata, ich bin auch Hasid, I'm also a child." So his father turns around to him and says to him, "If he's not your brother, then I am not your father." But in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to be standing by Rosh Hashanah. We're going to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam, "Kirachim of Albonim, have mercy on us like a father has mercy on his children. Which father do we want him to have mercy on? To a father who kicks his child out of his house, Chas V'Shalom, or a father who cares for his children no matter what the situation? And if Chas V'Shalom, we feel in our minds that there's one child or one of Klal Yisrael out there who's not a child of the Ribbono Shel Olam, who's not a son of the Ribbono Shel Olam or a daughter of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Chas V'Shalom, we don't want the Ribbono Shel Olam to turn around to us and say, 'If Ez Nishtam Brida, If Ben Nishtam Tata.'"